Next step number 702, November 18, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Fighting once again on the Armenia border begins our show today. You know, there are so many dimensions to what we talk about here. A lot of times when we look at what the world is going through, it's easy for us to focus in on the physical dimension. You see a war taking place, you see people battling, and then you say, well, what does this have to do with the spiritual? Like, is there a spiritual dimension to this? What I'm talking about, of course, is the border dispute in Artsakh, which gave way to the war last year. And it started up again just this past week, a couple days ago. Yeah. Again, Azeri aggression upon the Armenians, and this time on Armenian territory, this time right on Armenia, undisputed, actually on Armenia. And it gives way to political discussions about who's going to take care of who, who's going to back, who's going to ally with who. And then it gives way to the actual reality that really nobody cares about it. People care less about it. I mean, you go and you try to Google today a story on, let's say, NPR, on CBS, on NBC, Fox, ABC. Nothing. Yeah, BBC has a small little item on it. But you go to, of course, Armenian news medias, and there's a lot written about it because it pertains to the Armenians. But when you put all the Armenians together in the whole world, it's insignificant. And so is the story that comes out of Armenia, unless you're right there. But it has a significance to us beyond being Armenian in the sense that we have been advocating for people everywhere, even people who are unheard of. Yes, that's the next step. That's the next step for us to realize that we are all children of the same God. And there is the link. That's how you get into the spiritual. Let's backtrack a little bit, okay? Let's backtrack, because today I want to make these links very clear, because it's easy for us to talk about what's going on in Armenia with the escalation of armed activity, of violence, of the war. And it's easy to get caught up in that and forget that we are a show about Armadoxy, namely about the spiritual dimension. And is there a spiritual dimension? And what I want to share with you today is, yes, absolutely. It's all based on the spiritual dimension. The spiritual dimension of understanding who we are. Look, here's how simple it is. I'm going to bring it down really simple. Whether you know Armenia, you don't know where it is, what's going on, it's a small little landlocked area that joins together Europe and Asia and Africa. These three areas come together. If you can imagine a map right there, Armenia, it's landlocked. And it is circled by neighbors. Oh, and I'm sorry. I said I'm going to make it easy. Let me make it easy, okay? Your house, your condo, your townhouse, wherever you may be, your mobile home, wherever you are living, imagine living there with neighbors all around you, every side of you. You wake up in the morning and you open the window and you see one set of neighbors. You go to the other side of the house, you see another set of neighbors. You go to the front of the house and you see yet another set of neighbors. And you go to the back of the house and you see yet one more set of neighbors. And every one of these neighbors wants you out of there. Every one of these neighbors would do anything they can to see you eliminated, gone. And not only would they do anything they can, they do anything they can. They hassle you. They bully you. They throw stuff at you. They yell at you. They mock you. They sometimes even escalate it. Beyond throwing stuff, they may throw some fire at you, some fire bombs at you. They may start shooting at you. And what do you do eventually? What do? You look around and you're seeing on all sides of you, you see neighbors who want you out. Now, we're going to add one more dimension to this. You have a house, which is, let's assume it's a rectangle and you're not living in a triangular house, okay? Let's assume you're in a rectangle, so you have four different distinct neighbors. Three of those neighbors are friends! Are not only friends, but they will do anything they can to unite their efforts to do what they can to get rid of you. And this will go on for a day, 2 days. This will go on for a week, 2 weeks. Go on for a year, 2 years. It'll go on for 100 years, 200 years. In other words, these neighbors are not going to leave. These neighbors are your neighbors. And you have an option. Are you going to leave? And you say, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm right here. And you say, well, why? Why? You know what? Why don't you get rid? In fact, why don't you do something even better? Why, instead of getting rid of your property and leaving, why don't you sit down with them and talk with them and say, you want my property? Okay, here's the price for it. Why don't you pay this price? I'll be out of your hair and everything will be okay. But you can't, because you've been there for hundreds of years. You know everything about that property. You look down at that land and you see that it's soaked with blood of your ancestors who toiled on that land, who struggled. And you have what's called history on that land. And you can't get rid of it. That's how easy it is. Or that's how difficult it is. That's exactly what's going on in Armenia. You have neighbors who want you out. On three of the sides, those neighbors have united to get rid of you. The other side, indifferent. If you're gone, that's fine. Maybe not bothering you now, but at some future point, they may. That's what's going on in Armenia. The Azeris, backed by Turkey, who wants pan-Turkism, who wants to move the Turkish nation from one end of the continent to the other, and wants you out, sees you as a stumbling block. You're a small little Christian country amidst all these Muslims. And that, they're telling you, is not a big issue, because we get along, we respect Christians. And we respect. And so on an international level, people are saying, well, wait a minute, you guys, on paper, we're saying that you guys respect each other. So what's the problem here? Well, the problem is you keep beating us up. You keep coming over and you keep hitting us. You keep firebombing us. You keep trying to get rid of us. So what options do we have? That's the problem in Armenia. What options? Overwhelmed. One of the options, of course, is to sell the property, get out of there. Easier said than done, because it has a history, because it has monuments. And once you start looking at those monuments, you start realizing, hey, we have been here longer than the neighbors. Wait a minute, if anybody should move, they should move. But reality hits you again. They're not going to move. They outnumber you, something like 10 to 1. They're not going to move. And so you are in the stalemate position. Can't move. They can't move. Well, they can. They try. They start pushing a little bit. And this is the tension with which we've lived for the last hundreds and hundreds of years. Certainly in the last 30 years since Armenia's independence. And so what's the answer? Where do we find the answer? Is there an answer? And if not, then what do? Do we just reconcile with the reality? And those are really the fundamental questions that people are asking these days. They ask in a different way. Will the Russians help? Will America help? Will Joe Biden wake up? Will the French come in? What will happen? Will the Armenian people have the ability to unite? But these are all secondary questions. The fundamental question is, how do you exist? How do you exist in a neighborhood where you're not wanted? And so if you find a remedy today, we have a block party and we invite everybody over and we say, hey guys, you know, we're all part of the same team. Let's get along. I'll give you this. You give me that. Let's make some concessions. Okay, that's great. We'll call a ceasefire for how long? 1 week? 2 weeks? 1 year? 2 years? 100 years? 200 years? Eventually, it's going to burst. Eventually, it's going to burst. And that's not going to resolve the issue. You know, I'm talking about Armenia, but you've heard this same story everywhere else, right? You've heard it with the Israelis and the Palestinians, right? You've heard it today in Ukraine with the Russians, Belarus. You've heard about the Syrians. You've heard about the refugee problem. It's part of the problem of today, of what the world is. And here's the surprise. No different from the problem of yesteryears. How do we get along? We are in a world where our only hope as a planet is for us to have this understanding with one another. And we are not developing that language of understanding. Instead, we are developing, yes, that's the word, the language of war, the language of violence, fighting fire with fire. Fighting with more weapons, with more hatred, with more destruction. And there you are.
In and out of the front store, 12 back door angels. There was a golden brown. They didn't see me with my eye. To set they put we men to sleep.
So in looking for some spiritual answers, you also come to the realization that there are injustices. There's just the injustice of a group of people who want to just get along with their lives. Like just this morning, I was reading the Prime Minister of Armenia in a statement. He said, there is no border dispute. There is aggression against the sovereign territory of the Republic of Armenia. This is a direct quote. If the problem was the border dispute, Azerbaijan should have accepted our proposal of withdrawing forces simultaneously from the borderline between Soviet Armenia and Azerbaijan, deploying international observers along the borderline, and launching the process of demarcation and delimitation of borders long ago. I'll put the entire story on today's show notes. You could follow it along because I don't want to get into the politics of it, but I do want to talk about some of the injustices that breed this hatred, this violence, injustices of not addressing the problem. Several years ago, one of my dear parishioners ended up in a jail, and she's still there. She's still there about 15 years. She was the victim of domestic violence for about 25 years in her marriage. All sorts of violent aggression upon her, even to the point of locking her up in a garage, if you can imagine. Husband was so I don't want to use any descriptors. You can imagine what kind of person he'd have to be. Put this woman in a garage for a whole day, you know. She's crying away and everything. Anyway, this woman decides, I guess in an act of desperation, to hire somebody to kill her husband. And it fails, and she gets caught, and she goes to jail. And she has been there now for almost 15 years. Visited her many times. Did not kill anybody, just plotted to kill. Now, I'm not condoning anybody, don't tell you to do this or anything, but I'm pointing to the problem of an injustice. Had she had killed the man, she would have been eligible for parole. But because it was politically, there were politics involved in this, as far as the man having the political clout to prevent her from getting out, this is what you see. This is what you see, that she's still in jail, still in prison. And it's kind of bizarre, because when you talk about injustice, you see people who have done far much and greater crimes being let out, and she's still in jail. Why? Because, well, there's injustice. There's injustice, and that's a reality that we've got to face, because especially here in America, we pride ourselves on the just judicial system, and rightly so. It is a fantastic system until you get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff and you start finding out that, wow. And I think this is what happened in the last 2 years, especially with the Black Lives Matter movement. We're finding out that, wow, yeah, wait a minute, everything we've been talking about, this justice system, there is a segment of the population that isn't able to participate in this justice system to the level the other population doesn't. And so you've got this inequity building up, and it causes tension. It causes means by which we lash out and we rebel. And we see acts of violence. So the question is, how do you prevent all those on a spiritual dimension? Is, first of all, you've got to make things just. You've got to find peace. You've got to find justice. Easier said, obviously, than done. If it was easier to be done, it would have been done. But it's not. Or maybe it's not done because it's not easy. It's not done because it's not practical. Because there are profits to be made. There are scores to settle. There is an ego drive. And so we find that justice, as well as finding peace and harmony among people, has to be something that we all subscribe to. If the person on the other side isn't subscribing to your same formula, then you've got the conflict there. A conflict which escalates until the point that there's violence. Who has the greater weaponry? First of all, it's a fist fight. A fist fight escalates into a gunfight. A gunfight escalates into a neighborhood fight, to a country fight, and you got wars, right? That's how easy it is. It's not that complicated. And we see this every single day. But it begins with acts of injustice not being solved. And so you come down to the spiritual plane, and where are we at? How do we address these issues? How can we get to the answer? And you look around and you say that it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Because there's a realist in us that says these things aren't going to happen. We're not all playing with the same set of rules. That's another issue. And it gets more and more complicated as you go along. So it's not as easy. Yes, these conditions are provoked by very easy answers. Like you could see how they get to this point. But the solutions aren't easy at all. The solutions require people to be on the same page. It's like you could find the worst of all philosophies or religions, and if everybody adhered to it, yeah, there would be peace. Everybody. But everyone's not going to adhere to it. And the same is true when you find the best of philosophies, of ways of living. you try to convince people that this is a way of life, but not everybody buys it. And there's a lot of driving by ego, by money, and we see injustice is part of the human condition.
They grow all their roses red and paint our skies blue. Drop one penny in every second bowl. Make half the beggars lose. Why do the faithful have such a will to believe in something and call it the name they choose, having chosen nothing?
Now I know I didn't tell you anything new. I know I didn't tell you anything that you didn't know. It was just a matter of spelling it out and putting it out on the table. A lot of times you look at the condition of the world and you look at these huge, huge problems and you say, okay, well, there has to be a solution, or maybe there can't be a solution. Or maybe there is and we just haven't experimented with it yet. Let's talk about that in part two of today's Next Step. Here's a break. We take a break every week just to hear some good music, hear some good tunes. That's number one. Second, give us time to digest some of the things that were said as we get ready for part two. Here's today's song of the day. That is Yerevan to Paris, appropriate for today, right? That is off of an album called Jazz is Christ by Serge Tankian, written by Serge Tankian. Of course, you can hear on the keyboards on. Definitely, that was. I love that Fender Rhodes sound. He used to have a Rhodes. Yeah, I used to have a Rhodes. One of the big mistakes of my life was getting rid of the Fender Rhodes. Anyway, that was Digran Hamasyan, of course, on the Rhodes. You could just tell from the music, can't you? Anyway, appropriate song for the discussion we're having today. Yerevan to Paris, off of an album, Jazz is Christ. I'll have a link on today's show notes so you could check out more about it and more about the great music off that album. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops convened this past week. They got together in Baltimore for a general assembly. About 230 bishops. I laugh because, you know, these are just United States bishops. I think about in all of the United States, I think we have like 4 bishops. The Armenian Church, 2 of them are in positions as diocesan primates. The other 2 are retired. I think maybe 3. Anyway, the number is just amazing to me. It's like, wow. Anyway, 230 or so bishops got together, and they convened. This is the first time they got together since 2019. And why I'm bringing this up, I know we're talking about Armenian Orthodoxy, but I think that there's something to be said about a group of leaders of the church, bishops, episcopos, literally to mean overseers of diocese. They are overseers of their priests to discuss something very important, namely the Eucharist itself, the holy sacrament of the communion of Jesus Christ, communing with Jesus Christ. And this, I think, is something that you need to take focus on. You need to find an importance to, because it's the basis. It is the fundamental reason why you are there as a church, to tie people in with Jesus Christ. And in so doing, they become disciples of Christ. They become the doers of Christ's work here on earth. In other words, members of the Holy Church. Not by paying a membership due, but becoming actual members. Living, breathing Jesus Christ here in this world. That Holy Eucharist is at the center of our faith. That's why. That's why Holy Communion is the main act of the church. Because it's that communion with Jesus Christ himself. And so that Holy Eucharist for the Catholic Church, they're discussing it. Seriously. That if, for instance, you have Joseph Biden, the president of the United States, who claims to be a Catholic, and he is pro-abortion, how could he therefore be allowed to receive the Holy Eucharist, the communion? And this is a big issue. So anyway, you know what? I'm going to put a link on today's show notes, and I would really advise you, if you're interested in this subject, to listen to it. It has to do with, it's a segment about this entire controversy, and John Carr, the founder and co-director of the Initiative on Catholic Social Thought and Public Life at Georgetown University, will share an analysis of it. I advise you, if you want to, it's a 15-minute little, no, it's not even that, it's 4 or 5 minutes long. Listen to it, because it'll give you some of the background of what this is about. But briefly, the Catholic bishops are saying, okay, you have a president of the United States, the highest office, not arguably not only in the United States, but in the world, one of the most powerful people in the world, and he professes to be a Catholic. And then in teaching, the Catholic Church is against abortion, and here is a man professing to be a Catholic, and he is for abortion. So they said, is it possible for us to refuse him communion? That, okay, as long as you're going to do it. And Pope Francis has been very vocal about this as well, has said that in his entire ministry as a priest, he has never refused communion to anybody. And he congratulated President Biden on his election. In fact, it was very interesting. If you get a chance, you could do some research. I don't have the time to put this on the website, but it was interesting when Biden was inaugurated. Just compare the letter that went out from Pope Francis to the letter that went out from the U.S. Catholic bishops. I mean, one was just inviting in everything, and the U.S. Catholic bishops were just like, okay, this now that you're president, boom, 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 all of these things. It was just interesting. But Pope Francis was more inviting and more open-armed. But in this letter, from what I understand, they changed the tone of it towards the end and didn't specifically talk about the politicians. And it was probably for the reason that they didn't want to come off as using the Eucharist as punishment, using Jesus Christ as punishment. Like, if you don't do this, then we're not going to give you Jesus Christ. And that is a pretty big one, if you think about it. If you do the background on that, that has all kinds of complexities to it. So instead, they spoke about everybody, just everybody, accepting the sacredness of the Holy Communion. There is a tradition among Roman Catholics that I really like. It's called the Adoration, I think it is. I'm not sure exactly the name of it, but we've been present once in Seattle, Washington, and it is basically putting the Holy Eucharist on the altar table and just having people be in the presence. Maybe it's called the presence, yeah. And then just being in the presence of the Holy Eucharist. And you realize how powerful that is. You realize how powerful the Holy Eucharist is when you could separate it from the service of the Divine Liturgy and understand that that Eucharist is what it's all about. When you go and take that Holy Communion, you are communing with Jesus Christ, the Creator, the one who was there from the beginning of time. It is unbelievable. And I think that Orthodox Christians, including the Armenian Church, we need to be more in tune to the power of the Holy Eucharist. And that's why I'm presenting this to you today. Basically, what we're seeing is the Catholic bishops getting together and talking about the power of the communion. In this case, they were using it as, like I said, it could come off as a punishment, but that's why they didn't name Biden exactly in the documentation. But that's what they were buzzing around. It was not only Biden, but other politicians who might be professing Catholicism and at the same time acting contrary to the teachings of the Catholic Church. I believe in this little segment that I'm going to put online, John Carr talks about that too. If you really take both sides of the aisle, Democrat and Republican, the number of Roman Catholics in there are quite considerable, and you can bring about change. And that's where I come to today. We started off today's show talking about the injustices which have escalated into the form of war. And where is the power to change it? It's the power for us to start believing in what we have. We as Armenians, and specifically the Armenian Christian Church, specifically even more than that, the Armenian Orthodox Church, which has been around since time zero, has driven the Armenian population with the central message of Jesus Christ and a power that needs to be reckoned with, not on physical terms, but on a spiritual term. And this is a term that can overcome the difficulties of the physical.
Think I'll sit down and invent some fool, some grand court jester. And next time the die is cast, he'll throw a six or two.
But for these things to work, in other words, for these to be a solution, a spiritual solution to the political or the physical, we need to be on the same page. And obviously, we're not on the same page. You can't get consensus among a group of people these days, you know, let alone to change the world. You know, what are you talking about? But we do have to take some of these small steps and take them seriously. And if I leave you with one message today, it's the seriousness with which we need to approach our faith. And that's why I brought up the Catholic bishops. In other words, for these people, the Holy Communion, the Eucharist, was something serious. It wasn't just abstract. It isn't just like, okay, if you get up in the morning, Sunday morning, go to church and you'll get the Divine Liturgy, the Communion, which is the way I think in a lot of senses the Orthodox Church has approached it. It's kind of like out there. And this is where you get into the difficulties, because you don't want to regulate, you don't want to legislate the spiritual life of the people. And yet you have that within the Roman Catholic Church, where this is part of your duty as a Roman Catholic participant in life, right? Going to church, being part of that service, communing, going to Mass is part of it. This last Saturday, I was at the Rancho Mirage Church. Saturday and Sunday, they had a beautiful Armenian festival. And there was just a wide variety of people. A couple thousand people from different places came in. And during the day, a woman came up to me and said, "Father, would you give me a confession? May I come in for confession?" And I right away, of course, knew that this had to be a Catholic, because the Catholics do have that pronounced confession. Do we have that in the Armenian Church? Yes, we do. We have traded it off for public confession. And my personal theory is probably we just didn't have enough priests to handle the load. But anyway, it was in the festival, and I took her into the church, and we had a few minutes together. She shared with me some of her concerns, and among them, of course, was at the end of the day, she wanted to commune. She wanted to receive the Blessed Sacrament, and therefore she was confessing these sins. And I found that to me was very refreshing, that in public confession, when we have the public confession in our church, it's everyone confesses together, and it sometimes becomes sort of ritualized. In other words, you don't take time to think about it. And of course, it's that time where I've seen so many times people pass out those doilies and put it on people's head so the women don't, they're more consumed with the mechanics of the Holy Eucharist than the Eucharist itself. And so it was refreshing at this moment. Here is a woman who says, I want to come to confession so that I may receive the Holy Eucharist. I want to receive the Holy Eucharist with a clean heart. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that she's finding value. She understands the importance and the value of communing with Jesus Christ. And I think that we have an opportunity here. As I said, I want to leave you with something. It's that opportunity to take seriously what we already have. I think the Orthodox Church, we already have that Holy Eucharist, that communion, but it's to take it seriously. Take it seriously to the point that this is what we have. You know, when I was growing up, people did not take communion every Sunday. You would go to the liturgy and you would not partake. And there was a wide variety of reasons why people didn't do that. But it was only recently, I'd say in the last 30, 40 years, that more and more people, especially in our church, we were encouraging people that if you're going to church, it's like you're participating in the Thanksgiving. Eucharist literally means Thanksgiving. And we likened it to the Thanksgiving meal that you celebrate at grandma's house. And imagine going to grandma's house and after all the preparation, you're ready to sit down and then you say, sorry, I don't want to eat anything. Do you know how upset grandma would be at you for pulling off something like that? I can't tell you that God's upset that we don't take it, but I can imagine we should be upset because we've gone through the preparation and we're not participating. But I can't blame ourselves. We're not putting that meal, that Holy Eucharist, at the top of our priority. And so when you look at the world situation right now, with all the violence going on, all the injustice, it has to start at some place, and it starts with us. We say this all the time, let it begin with me. Well, how does it begin with me? It begins by me understanding Jesus Christ in my life. Understanding that Jesus Christ has to come into my life. Understanding through the Holy Eucharist that I take Christ within me and I become an agent of Christ. I become a disciple of Christ. I become a doer of Christ. And therefore, if I want to put away injustice, I work through that justice system as Christ has directed.
In and out of the back door ran one front door angel. Her hair was a golden brown. She smiled and I think she winked her eye.
So you see, the answers are really inside of us. We know what those answers are. The kingdom of heaven is within you and without you. The kingdom of heaven is right there. Jesus Christ is the answer. We have it, but we don't take it seriously. Jesus Christ is the reason why we're here. It's the reason why we exist. It's the reason why there is life. Now, if we understand that, then we take him seriously. The Holy Eucharist is something very serious in that it is the central act of the Christian community. And this is not, you know, I know there's going to be some Bible bangers out there who are going to say, well, we got the Bible. No, before you do that, before you say anything about the Bible, go and read a little bit. What was the first act of the Christian church? What was the first act of the Christian community? They got together around the Holy Eucharist. What is the point of the story of Emmaus, on the road to Emmaus? Read it. John chapter 20. Read it. It's right there. Is it 21? Excuse me. They're walking and Jesus is walking with them post-resurrection. And Jesus is telling them all about scripture, telling them all about the stories, and their eyes were closed until what does he do? The act of breaking the bread. And it says their eyes were opened. This is the central act of the Christian church. And if we can take that seriously, everything else will fall into place. We can find solutions within ourselves. We can find solutions to the big problems because we start having a different perspective, namely the perspective of Jesus Christ. And then we are open to the possibilities, which right now we aren't. I don't want to get into those, but if you read between the lines what we said earlier, yeah, there are possibilities. There are ways of solving this, solving inequity. Solving injustice, but being open to those possibilities also has to be part of the formula that you put out there. That's today's next step. Okay, you know what? I've been nursing a cold for the last couple of days. Probably heard it in my voice, too, or in my nasal passages. Without getting too graphic, here's Susie. I'll be back.
Before getting back to the Next Step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The Next Step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of you, for the wonderful support messages that you send us and the help, the prayers. You know, we have a lot of programs going on. And next week is Thanksgiving week. We do have a newsletter coming out of In Issues. If you're not on our mailing list, make sure you get on there. It will outline all of the programs that we've been involved in. Of course, many of you know because we run our Bible studies on Monday evenings. We have our Next Step on Thursdays. We have our programs throughout the week, different video presentations, and just a wide assortment and a wide variety. And of course, the most important thing is we do. We have the actions of helping others, of reaching out, going beyond ourselves. Next week, we kick off our annual toy drive. We have the Children's Memorial coming up and a wide assortment of opportunities for you to get involved in hands-on. And that'll all be out there starting next week. We will put links on today's show notes. Please do check them out. And you could always drop me a line, of course, at feedback@epostle.net. If you want to make a donation, just go to inhisshoes.org. There's a donate button. It tells you all different ways of donating. That does it for today's show. I will get another cup of tea and hopefully help this congestion go away. But in the meantime, without getting overly graphic about it, on behalf of our producer, Susie, and myself, Father Vazgen, we invite you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.